ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today. World Cup today? No, it's MLS Cup today. Yes, MLS Cup week continues here on Soccer Today. I'm Kevin Larame with Dwayne Mullins, as always, joining us today to talk about the Seattle side and also to talk about Mark Dos Santos and the Vancouver Whitecaps. Matt Pence of The Athletic, staff writer for The Athletic Soccer, joins us. How are you today, Matt?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on.
It's good to have you on, Matt, again. And first off, we'll start with the mood in Seattle. Obviously, 69,000 tickets sold. We're hearing a lot of excitement in there. But just what is it like on the ground in Seattle right now? Is it starting to ramp up, build up for the game on Sunday?
I feel like it's kind of been a slow developing week because of the game being on Sunday rather than Saturday, like it's been the last couple years in different markets. I feel like the Sounders have been off practice the last couple days. So they're kind of easing back into that. There haven't been a lot of people in market yet. But I do think that from a fan perspective, with the way they gobbled up tickets late last week, and it does seem like that side of it, there's an anticipation here that's really beyond anything I've experienced having covered the team since 2014. They've had some big moments since then. But overall, I just think that the overall excitement level, the casual Seattle sports fans that seem to be bought in, I think that there's an overall buzz that's really above and beyond anything I've ever seen.
Fair enough. I find it is interesting that, of course, it is the third, 3 out of 4 years been the same matchup, and at least in the market that I'm in Toronto right now. I'm not sure it's matched the excitement, and I think it's partly because it's the same, right? Is there an element of that, or because it's in Seattle this time, it's completely changed?
Yeah, I think they could be playing just about anybody, and people would be pretty jacked up about having the game here. Similar, it does feel a little bit like how it was. I was lucky enough to be in Toronto in 2016, and there was a similar vibe around the city that hosting this big type of event for the first time and how it seemed to kind of transcend the typical MLS bubble. And I think that's what you're seeing here too. And from a writer end, having Seattle, Toronto, again, you have those narratives and all that kind of stuff. But again, from the fan perspective, I mean, they could be playing just about, they could be playing Chivas USA, I think, and somehow people would be pretty jacked up for it. The Toronto element, I think, is less appealing to people than just having the game here and being able to host.
One thing that is fascinating to me also is the evolution of this matchup of Seattle versus Toronto. We've seen, and we talked on yesterday's show with Rudy Schuler, the evolution a bit of Toronto FC since the last time both those teams met in the final of MLS in 2017. On the Seattle side, Seattle has learned how to score goals, and the presence of Raul Ruiz Diaz and the continuation of the great performance of Nico Lodero truly spell a dangerous offense for Seattle. How was it to see this evolution of Seattle this year and having an offensive threat capable of scoring in the playoffs this time around?
For sure, and I think that this time of year, if you have a couple big wins and you're kind of riding high in the playoffs, I feel like everyone tends to gloss over the struggles, which is natural. I feel like that's a human instinct. But I feel like over the course of this season, the Sounders really went long stretches where they struggled for rhythm. They haven't had everybody healthy at the same time or had a lot of guys away on international duty. So coming into this year, that was a big point of emphasis. And you saw that in March and April, they were scoring all these goals and looked like a brand new team. But you didn't really see that for much of the rest of the year until recently. And I think the Sounders have kind of tapped in recently to something that they've always had, which is sort of their biggest players the DPs who they've spent the money on coming through in the big moments. And I think it's been a little bit more that than anything hugely systemic, although they've certainly tweaked and they do play a little bit better soccer than maybe they did 2 years ago. But I think they're still sort of in the midst of that evolution in terms of really being one of those forerunners of the attacking game in MLS.
Both teams this year had a similar pathway to MLS Cup, having some struggles during the regular season, even questions about the manager going forward on both sides. And on both sides right now, both those conversations are dead, are moot, because they're in MLS Cup. And we've seen Brian Schmetzer, and I think Vanny to a point, but especially Brian Schmetzer in this case, Matt, how a bit underrated I think he has been over the last few years, and now he doesn't get the recognition I think he deserves. How is it to be around Brian Schmetzer, and what is his influence not only on this team but on the whole community of the Sounders?
Yeah, I'm actually working on a story for The Athletic that's going to be out at some point this week, just about sort of that general idea that he is underappreciated, and that maybe it does start to bother him eventually at some point that he doesn't get mentioned in the same breath as some of the better coaches in the league. And I think you started to see that come out in his press conferences and in his sort of television appearances. He just seems to have a little bit more of an edge to him. He's a little bit more fiery. I think you're starting to see him wanting to get a little bit more credit for what he's been able to accomplish. And I think that's warranted. I mean, the game plan that he put out against LAFC, I mean, that was, I think, probably the most complete performance that I've seen out of a Sounders team in terms of the quality of the team that they were playing and how they were able to neutralize them and play their own game. So I think that he's definitely taken another step that way. What he's always had is a really close connection to the community. I think it's pretty rare in professional sports to have a head coach that grew up in that city and played for that team and is really sort of that place. And he's always had that, which really connects him to the community. He's been here his entire life, played here in the 70s or played here in the 80s. And he's kind of been around ever since. So he always has that. I think it gives a lot of people another reason to buy in. And as you said, I think that his contract goes through next year. And there had been some rumblings that maybe they would just let him play that out. And what would happen if he went into next year as sort of a lame duck? And I don't think he's going to have to worry about that. He's going to get a substantial raise and probably a contract extension here in the next couple weeks or months.
The MLS hype machine has been talking about, you know, last year Atlanta United was the greatest team of all time. This year, throughout the season, LAFC was the greatest team of all time. Been a lot of focus on that, and I'm pretty sure that if you were to get inside their brains, they're not happy that LAFC is not in the final. Certainly in Toronto, there is a feeling, sort of a chip on the shoulder feeling, that they're not getting the respect they deserve for being to 3 and 4 finals. Do you think there's a similar sort of frustration in Seattle that the Sounders are not getting the respect they deserve league-wide, when there's all these flashes in this pan, these new exciting things that sort of get the attention of the hype machine more than them?
Maybe a little bit, but I think the Sounders have been pretty clear-eyed about the fact that they haven't really had a standout whole season in the way that 2017 Toronto did, which to me, honestly, I think that they're still probably the best team in league history that I've seen, even compared to that Atlanta team and that LAFC team. But the Sounders just haven't really had that one great year where they put it all together for 10 months. And so I think they kind of understand that maybe they're viewed a little bit differently and is less complete of a product, because I think that they have been, but that doesn't necessarily take away from what they've accomplished in being a really good postseason team. And again, I feel like this is the time of year that sort of matters to casual fans and that people will remember. I think that sort of the MLS diehards, the ones that are kind of in this ecosystem, we all like to sort of debate it and talk about those different teams. But when you talk about the casual fans who are just dropping in now and buying tickets to MLS Cup and getting excited about the playoffs, I think for them, the Sounders have certainly been one of the standout teams over the last half decade or so.
In Toronto, the biggest talking point leading into MLS Cup final is, of course, the health of Jozy Altidore and whether or not he will be available for all or any of the game on Sunday. I even so far as people are talking about using him as a quote-unquote decoy off the bench to try and make sure that Seattle has to plan for him regardless. I am curious from a Seattle perspective whether Jozy's status matters. Do you think that they're going to change their game plan or whether they're affected by this, you know, the mind games that TFC is trying to play on them by not being completely upfront about what his status is?
I think it does change what their strategy has to be. Because if you look at Javier Arriaga and Kim Keehee in Central to Vence, I think that they had their best game together against LAFC. And they were able to be really physical with Carlos Vela, able to be really aggressive. And they just kind of look like a cohesive team. But they haven't often looked like that. Whenever Roman Torres was suspended for PED use for 10 games, those two guys, I mean, Seattle was giving up 3 goals a game for like 4 or 5 games straight, it felt like. So those two had really struggled to find a rhythm. And they had really struggled with sort of big, stronger physical forwards. Ibrahimovic killed them twice whenever they played. And I think that Torres is their one counter who can step in, be a little bit more physical with guys that are a little bit bigger than Carlos Vela. So if Jozy were to play, I think the Sounders would probably have to start Torres. And if he doesn't, I think that they probably sort of ride the momentum of that hot hand of the guys that have played well in L.A. So I do think that playing Jozy or even having the option of playing Jozy does require the Sounders to sort of make a couple of tough choices. So I do think that that's a real storyline that's having real effect.
Yesterday, I asked this question to Rudy Schuler, Matt. I asked him, I'm like, this is the rubber match of a trilogy fight. Who has the mental edge going into the rubber match, according to you, Matt?
I honestly think that it's kind of a fresh game. The teams are pretty similar. But any sort of momentum that Toronto would have had in 2017, that Vanny might have over Schmetzer, I think what Seattle's been able to do in getting here and able to sort of slaying the dragon in LAFC, I think that would cancel out any mental edge that Toronto might still have. Because Seattle really does have some really positive momentum coming in here. And maybe you would look at the series itself and say that Toronto still has that over them from 2017. But I don't get a sense of that among the group right now.
Matt Pence, writer for The Athletic and author of The Sound and the Glory, a great book about the Seattle Sounders that came out last year. Matt, before we let you go, I have to ask you, I'd be remiss if I didn't. You have a great piece right now on the Vancouver Whitecaps and Mark Dos Santos available on The Athletic. You spent a few hours with a couple players and Mark Dos Santos in November after, of course, they were eliminated from the playoffs and still training. What is your overall thought on Mark Dos Santos, the Vancouver Whitecaps, and their state right now in the I would say, meander of the offseason?
Yeah, I think that Mark is a really good, insightful interview. I always like being able to talk with him. He's very forthright, I think sometimes maybe even to his own detriment when it comes to how fans read his comments. But I always learn something whenever I talk to him. And whenever you talk to him, you almost always get sucked into his vision of how he sees things playing out. So I think that's always the temptation as you go up there and he's all excited about whatever they have in the works. But then you take a step back and look at where they're at. And I mean, this was a tough year. I think that they had a couple different controversies. The team struggled. They had to take the drastic step of allowing season ticket holders to opt out until January, which is certainly not showing a lot of confidence in where you're at as a team. So I think this is a really crucial offseason. I think that they have to get it really right and that this is going to be a really big year for them to show some kind of improvement, because they really are just stagnant and not in a particularly good place. And you talk to Dos Santos, and again, it does seem like he's confident of staying the course, and that he thinks that there are some big things around the bend. So he's asking fans to trust him. I think that that's even an exact quote of what he told him, of what he told me. He asked fans to just let him stay the course and know that there's going to be better days ahead. And so at a certain point, that trust is going to wane, but it's going to be really fascinating to see how he lives up to that over the next couple months.
Matt Pence, writer for The Athletic and author of The Sound and the Glory, thank you very much for your time today and all the best during this busy week of MLS Cup.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's an exciting time. Safe travels to everybody coming in from Toronto. And if they want any recommendations, I put a bunch out there on Twitter the other day. So feel free to look those up.
All the best to everyone traveling. Thank you, Matt. And we'll be right back after this very short break.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at @SoccerTodaySPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/Sports Podcasting Network. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. Kevin Laramie with Dwayne Rollins, as always. You like Canadian soccer and you want to hear more about Canadian soccer and all its glory. Well, you can follow Dwayne, you can follow myself, you can follow this show, but as well, you can become a patron, can become a VIP of SPN, of the Sports Podcasting Network, and you'll get the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast for $2 a month. Next episode is dropping as we speak. The Two Solitude Soccer Podcast. Dwayne and I talk about the Canadian Premier League, about Tristan Borges, about what we like about the Canadian Premier League and that we wish to stay for next year, and what we don't. An interesting conversation between Dwayne and I, and it's available for patrons in the $2 tier on our Patreon at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. MLS Cup today continues. Dwayne, looking ahead to the big game on Sunday.
Precisely, and it is, as the hours pass, as the minutes pass, it does become more and more front of center of the mind here in Toronto amongst those in the soccer bubble, for sure. It's a weird one here when the game's not here, when you don't have to worry about tickets, you don't have to arrange it. And I think back to those early, to the two MLS Cups that were here, a lot of the early part of the week was logistic, right? And those logistics don't matter. But certainly it is more in my mind today than it was at this time yesterday. And talking to Matt, it seems like it's about to ramp up to a huge amount in Seattle tomorrow. Tomorrow's the day that TFC arrives in Seattle. I know that their press conference is scheduled for 5:30 local time out there tomorrow. And several players, not Josie, but several players are scheduled to be part of that podcast, or press conference. So that'll be...
It's kind of a podcast. It's people talking on a microphone, and it's probably going to be available somewhere on your phone. So I guess it kind of works.
Yeah. Oh, I remember the two that I covered here. That really is when the week felt real, right? Like, no one's really in town up until Thursday. And then on Thursday, yeah, that's when I remember standing up at the what was then called the Kia Training Ground. And standing there and seeing people that you recognize walking in, like, there's Ives, there's the MLS soccer crew, there's, you know, and it's like you're waiting to get your pass.
And you wait. Yeah. And then it's not coming, so you have to take the bus back downtown. Yeah, that was my experience. But continue.
Yeah, and then you go in to interview, and I did this a big cluster, and like you're used to going up to the, you know, I don't do it daily by any means anymore, but I have in the past where there's, you know, Toronto's more covered than most, but it's still basically like James Grossi and a couple other guys. Like
Rocket, it used to be, you know,
used to be Molinaro, Larson, and Grossi, and then, you know, one or two would be new every day, but in MLS Cup, suddenly there's 50 people there, right? And it's like, oh, something's happening.
Like, oh, wait, are you telling me I'm on the outdoor press conference for the game? All right, I'm going to go shopping. I need some long underwears for this one.
Well, yeah, no, you did. But you won't need it quite this time. I think game time is supposed to be in the 50s Fahrenheit, which is
fine. And 70,000 people will generate heat. That's not going to be a worry. Just on the docket today, if you are in Seattle already, if you're getting ready for the big game, if you plan this week and you have it all off from work. Training session today, Seattle Sounders at Starfire Sports Training Facility at 10 a.m. Pacific, so it's 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Also, all the times here will be in Pacific Time in Seattle. There's going to be a team press conference at 1:30 p.m. Pacific at the Grand Hyatt for the Seattle Sounders. There's a press conference, MLS Works, tonight at 5 p.m. Pacific between MLS Works, Seattle, and also a TFC team press conference. Select players will be available tonight at 5:30 p.m. at the Grand Hyatt Princess B Hall, that you can find Hall on 721 Pine Street in Seattle tonight if you are around. So that's pretty much the schedule today on MLS Cup Daily.
Yeah, it is. They made a sacrifice in terms of the ability to have like events around the game when they moved it to the moved it away from a neutral site. But I think that what we've seen in the last 4 years, sell out in Toronto, sell out in Toronto again, sell out in Atlanta, sell out in Seattle, tells you all you need to know about why it was important to move away from the neutral site. Yes, you don't have a concert on the Wednesday. But I'll tell you what, I was at the 2010 MLS Cup final at a neutral site, and the concert on the Wednesday, there were 30 people there. So, you know.
Who was it, Nickelback?
It was Sloan, a Canadian band Sloan, which is fairly
maybe,
popular, but nonetheless.
That's why there was 30 people. But no, yeah, I agree. And, you know, neutral site, the only... To be a neutral site and to still, I guess, draw the... What's the neutral site in the world? There's like big two major competitions that do have neutral site, right? It's only the UEFA Champions League final, of course, the World Cup and stuff like that, but that doesn't count. And you have the NFL. What else? What other neutral site do you have that doesn't exist?
Like the grand final in the AFL.
Well, Wembley, like, I mean, Wembley, like the
FA Cup final. The Cup. There are examples of it, but the examples of it generally are either massive competitions that are at least a half a century old and have, you know, universal appeal in the mainstream, whereas MLS Cup certainly does not yet. And that was the problem in Toronto, having the firsthand experience of it, is that there was this expectation that because there was sellout showing up to TFC, that all of those fans were equally MLS fans. They weren't.
No, they're
you
fans.
You see this firsthand in Montreal, right? Like, yeah, there's a lot of Impact fans, but those Impact fans aren't necessarily MLS fans.
They're not necessarily
a challenge for the league.
More than that, they're not necessarily all soccer fans. It's about more than just the sport, right? It's about the community. You go with your friends and you hang out, you enjoy, you go together out before, out after. It's that also. It doesn't even mean you're a fan of the tactical aspect of the sport and that you break down every single play that happens like we do.
No, for sure. I mean, I have a lot of friends myself in the TFC community that came into it because they thought it would be a good time out and it was enjoyable to them and they've met people and all that. And that's not taking anything away from them. In fact, it's a fight I fight all the time with, you know, when I have my foot in both worlds, right? Like the supporters world and the sort of general world. And, you know, those in the supporters world often get caught up in what we call in the show bubble thinking. And I think that we're kind of getting off topic on the last cup, but it certainly does speak to why you need to let that bubble celebrate its day. And it's really about the game, and it's not about the events around it. And that's why when you're talking about the hype in the cities, it's the weekend that matters. It's the hours leading up to the game. It's the, you know, the meeting for breakfast. And it's why in some ways here in Toronto for this one, I don't feel that I'm losing out by not actually being in the stadium as much as I really would have liked to. And I certainly would have. And if anyone wants, you know, randomly send me $2,000 today, I'll be happy to take it and go. But
there's still time, but yeah.
But nonetheless, it's like I'm still getting a lot of that on game day. I'm still going to meet people for breakfast, which we did each of the 2 years. We're still going to go, you know, the city plays Liverpool. So we're going to then go to watch that for 2 hours. And then we're going to go to another pub to meet some other people, another group, and then go to a third pub to watch the game. Yeah. And that sort of process is kind of what the game's about. It's, you know, instead of that third pub, it used to be the stadium. Now it's a third place, right?
Poor liver. And also, good luck to everyone's liver out there for Sunday. And let's continue MLS Cup talk. And there's a topic that resurfaced yesterday, and it's because TFC talked about it. The CONCACAF Champions League spot given to the MLS Cup champion will not be given to Toronto if they do win. And Toronto, in the same conversation that happened in 2017 and in 2016, is also, I remember in the East Final, both Montreal and Toronto kind of alluded to this. The team would not get a CONCACAF Champions League spot, and it would still be Montreal, of course, representing Canada. What do you think about this conversation that really got the fans arguing and talking a lot on social media?
Well, there's no argument here. The position is, it's I get it from a logistics, from a sort of outside perspective. It does seem weird that if TFC does win the championship, that it will not be in the Champions League. But then you have to think about it, of what this is. It's a national competition, so you have to win your national title to get there. And TFC lost the national title when they lost to the Impact in the Voyageurs Cup final. And if you want to then, you know, I know that there are some that will argue that the Welsh teams can and do, would, if it ever happened, would represent England in the Champions League. But the sacrifice that the Welsh teams did to allow that was to not allow themselves entry through the Welsh setup. So they can't win the Welsh Cup in advance. They don't participate in it. They have sacrificed their abilities to join that competition and have completely bought into the fact that they are part of the English system.
So technically what you're saying is, if this would be allowed, Toronto FC would have to withdraw from the Canadian soccer, maybe not the association, but at least from the Canadian Championship, not participate in that, and participate in the U.S. Open Cup and the whole American setup, which is never going to happen.
Yeah, precisely. That's exactly what would have to happen. In fact, not just TFC. It would have to be all three.
Canadian teams
would
never happen. Because what's the crown jewel of the Canadian Soccer Association when it comes to private sponsors? And yeah, it's the Canadian Championship every year.
Yeah, and it's unique. And you look, I agree that it would be nice from a purely partisan Toronto perspective. And I get why the players, who aren't mostly Canadian, would think that it's a little weird. But when you take a step back and look at it from a grand overall system standpoint, there's no argument to be made. And as much as it will be, I guess, frustrating for TFC fans to watch the Impact in the Champions League next winter, well, they'll have an opportunity to reverse that for 2021, just in a couple months after that. So it goes on. And I think that the system would be losing a lot if it were to drop out of that. The Voyageurs Cup would lose a lot of its luster if you eliminated the MLS teams from it. I mean, we wouldn't have the opportunity to have major upsets in the way that you did now. It would just essentially become another CanPL trophy.
Yes, CanPL, yeah, pretty much, yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah, it would be a cup in the CanPL. I mean, I'm sure Calgary would have won it based on how things played out. So there you go.
It's true. It's an interesting idea of, oh, we're getting slighted because we don't get the position, the spot, if we win the competition. But it's also a competition that is allowed to have a representative represent the U.S. Soccer Federation through that competition. And you cannot, because you are part of the Canadian Soccer Association. So it has nothing to do with MLS. It has everything to do with United States Soccer Federation and the Canadian Soccer Association and CONCACAF, and nothing to do with the actual management of MLS or decision of the front offices of MLS or some.
Yes, I guess you could look at it this way, that if TFC wins the championship, they do get to represent the league in the Champions Cup.
That's
because
true.
That is a league. That's league versus league. That's not federation versus federation.
And League's Cup, aren't they in the League's Cup too? Or they will be, or something?
They've already qualified for that, for what it's worth. The last thought on that is, as much as TFC is, the headlines are today, as TFC feels that they deserve it, I'm not sure TFC would have said anything had they not been directly asked.
Well,
and you ask a player, if you win, shouldn't you get a Champions League spot? Of course the player is going to go,
right? Of course.
They're not thinking about it beyond that.
It's true. It's something they never have talked about. So it's logical. We should. Yeah, that's true. On that note, before we say goodbye, I want to plug once again our Patreon feed, patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork, where for now you have a $2 tier with a Canadian soccer focus show, the Two Solid Dudes Soccer Podcast. That's going to change. Well, that show won't change, but you're going to get more shows to hear us and more voices joining the network too, talking about other topic than just Canadian soccer. You're going to have audio documentaries. One of the things that Dwayne and I always wish we could do more of, we are going to do more of. And by Christmas, you'll have more details in the next few weeks when we're Ryan and everything. But Dwayne and I have already chosen our first topic, and it's going to be a great topic if you like this show, and especially if you like the Two Solid Dudes Soccer Podcast. So you can follow that show on patreon.com/sportspodcast. And it's work where we did talk about Tristan Borges on yesterday's show that is available since this morning on our feed. Tristan Borges apparently is interesting a few teams in Canada. Apparently, according to Nilton Jorge and Sofiane Benzaza of the Cuffle Ball Club, a great podcast and great news source of everything Montreal Impact and MLS here in French in Montreal. And according to more sources also in Vancouver, the Montreal Impact and the Vancouver Whitecaps are apparently interested in the 2019 Golden Boot of the Canadian Premier League.
It just isn't surprising that they'd be interested in a 19-year-old domestic. The question I have is, what is his contract status with Forge? Does the contract allow for him to be sold to those teams? And if that is the case, how much are those teams willing to pay for him? Because I think it is important for the CAMPL to hold its ground to a certain amount so that it is keeping, it's valuing its assets. Because if it just gives away these players and lets them walk away on freeze, then that's a big part of what the business model can and should be, that they're letting walk out the door, and it's a bad precedent to set. And I know Major League Soccer in the past has paid transfers to the USL in recent years. It resisted that for years, and it still, unless it absolutely has to, still resists it. So hopefully, if this is the case, he gets a fair look and it's the right time to move on. It is the right time to move on, you know? He is of an age where in Major League Soccer, they don't always play their young kids. So I'd be a little concerned from that perspective. But in a general sense, 19 turning 20, that's absolutely the time to move up a league. You should not be holding back. It's young, but it's not stupid young.
He doesn't owe Forge anything, right? He doesn't have to stay next year just to give back for the opportunity that Forge gave him. It's not how it works in the world of football. You were paid for your performances this year, and maybe the rest of the world is calling your name, and maybe you should answer that call.
Well, no, absolutely. And I think the league would view it, and I think even Forge fans, for the most part, would view it as a positive development for him to move forward. I think most Canadian Premier League fans that I talk to very much are excited by the idea and the concept of following their players to the next level, and that's something that they'll look forward to doing when that player moves up to a next level. I'm sure some of them are already doing it with Emery Welshman, who wasn't really their player, but has moved to a different place.
But also, if you go use an analogy, and we can attest to this, it's quite something when you follow a player. Example like Alfonso Davies that we've been following for 4 years now. First time I talked to him was when he was 15 years old, representing Canada and in youth level and everything. So it's quite something when you see the evolution of a player to the level. And when it happens to a club that you follow and you love and you're really close to, I can only imagine the feeling is duplicated and multiplied. So it's probably an amazing feeling. And that's something that we wish for every supporter of the Canadian Premier League and soccer in general.
Yeah, it's... Look, I think we get caught up a little too much when we're talking about the CAMPL that it's all about the national team. And it's partly about the national team, but it's also about building communities and finding players that relate to those communities and following those careers on. And they're not even, you know, there's just a lot of different ways that you can have this see success in this league that are go beyond creating national team caps. And Borges, if he move, you know, for him to get a national team cap where he is right now, he's going to need to go push himself at a higher level because, quite bluntly, he's not breaking through in the midfield of the Canadian national team playing the CAMPL. So even if that is your measure, then you absolutely should be hoping for him to move on to another level. Is MLS the right level?
unless he decides to be a defender, then he might have a shot. that's a trick.
Yeah, well there's a rumor that Dominic Zatora is going to be called up to the to the next camp. So we'll see when that's released.
Tomorrow, right? It was supposed to be today, but it'll be tomorrow. So we'll have that on the maybe a special edition of the Two Solid Soccer Podcast in the near future. Maybe, but on that note, if you want to continue to follow us on social media to stay up to date to how we're feeling about soccer, of course, and about more topics in the world of sports, at 24th Minute for Dwayne, at Kev Laramie for myself, and at Soccer Today SBN for this show. Once again, patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork to get more on Canadian soccer with Dwayne and myself, and in the very near future, more tiers, more content, but especially more quality sports podcasts for you to listen to. And until tomorrow, where we continue to talk about MLS Cup during our MLS Cup week, it's MLS Cup today. Until tomorrow, thank you to Matt Pence for his time today. And as always, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.